Today is October 4th. It is Tuesday night at Shari Tefillah. We're learning Mishnah, Masechet Bava Kama. And last time we basically finished the second Mishnah. There were some sources I had brought from the Gemara and other places that we didn't get to see, but we'll go on to a new Mishnah. Don't want to get too bogged down. This Mishnah is Mishnah Gimel, the third Mishnah of the first Perek. It's a very, very short Mishnah, but it's very, very difficult. And some interesting things come up here. So let's just read the Mishnah. It's all together something like 20 words. Mishnah Gimel. Shum kesef v'shaveh kesef b'fnei beitin v'al pi edim b'nei chorin b'nei brit v'nashim b'chlal hanezek v'hanizak v'mazik b'tashlumin. It's all Morse code. Even if we translate it won't be clear.
Still code.
So shum kesef, that's not the word shum that means garlic, and it's not the word shum that means anything or nothing. It's shum from the language that means to appraise or to a value. The shum kesef, the evaluation of kesef, v'shaveh kesef, which probably means the evaluation of shaveh kesef. Shaveh kesef means equal to money. Shaveh kesef is usually, although it might not be here, we'll see, an expression that means metaltalin, in other words, movable goods, that it can be used as barter in place of money. They're shaveh kesef. They're worth money and they function as money. Anything can be used for barter. So it says something like the evaluation of money and the evaluation of that which is worth money, bifnei beitin. In the presence of Beit Din. It seems to me Beit Din does the evaluation. So now we can begin to get an inkling that when we're talking, of course, about Nizikin, the Beit Din has to do two things. It has to ascertain that actually Nezik was done by X to Y, and then it has to command what, if at all, has to be paid as far as payments go. So this Mishnah so far is saying something about the fact that Beit Din makes those determinations. We'll go back to that, of course, in another few minutes. Val pi edim, and according to witnesses, so I guess it means that the determination of value of how much has to be paid, or perhaps it means not even that, not just that, but also the very fact that there was nezek done by X to Y, has to be al pi edim. You need witnesses, two witnesses. Not one, you need two.
Right.
B'nei chorin, witnesses who are free men, as opposed to avadim, as opposed to slaves.
Right. And witnesses.
Who are b'nei brit.
Who are
Jewish.
Jews.
And then it says, v'anashim b'chal hanezek. And women are included in nezek. Now that, of course, would seem to include two things. The woman as the mazik. Well, she's responsible, right. Just like a man who's a mazik, right. And also the woman who's the nizak, who's been hurt, the mazik who hurt a woman is just as responsible as if he hurt a man. And then it says something that's really cryptic, v'hanizak v'mazik b'tashlumin. The one who was damaged, hanizak, v'mazik, and the damager, are in tashlumin. They have to pay. What did you say? I understand that the mazik has to pay, but what do you mean that the nizak has to pay? The person who was hurt has to pay. Okay, what's that about?
Can I ask you with regard to the part about women? Mm-hmm. Does this mean this translation renders it as claiming compensation? Does that mean that they're so given that they may have to pay for causing damage or compensation has to be paid for causing woman damage. Is this indicating that the woman can obtain herself the compensation independent of her husband or father or any male relative? So is this accurate, this rendering?
Well, we have to look at it in the proper stages. If a woman was hurt, nizoka, then she is a legal entity and she is the baldin, she is the one that goes to court, and the payments, if there'll be payments, will go to her. However, depending on her status, anything that she acquires might come immediately under the ownership of someone else.
Like her father or her husband.
But that's a whole different can of worms. What it might be that this Mishnah is coming to exclude is one of two possibilities. Either you might have said that if you hurt a woman, well, you didn't do anything. Or at least you don't have to pay the same damages if you hurt a man. For example, we know if you hurt a slave, in certain cases, you have to pay less than if you hurt someone else. So you might have thought that. And it says, no, the woman is the same value as the man. Secondly, you might have thought that if you hurt a woman, yes, you still have to pay, but you might have thought perhaps the payment goes directly to a man. And you might have thought perhaps the Baal Din, the one who comes to court, is the man who's her guardian. Mm-hmm. That also is not true. She is the legal entity. But then again, like I said earlier, what actually happens to the money, that's a whole different can of worms.
Okay.
Obviously, if she's single, if she's an almana or a grusha, the money will go to her. Mm-hmm. If she's married, it depends what her ketubah says.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Okay.
And if she is not married and she's in her father's household, as far as I know, but don't quote me on it, the money is hers.
Right. I was going to say, if she's a widow.
Right, so almanah grusha, right.
Oh, right.
Okay. So that's why this is interpreted to be in here, is because women are a different situation.
You might have thought, but it says clearly not so.
Well, so why is this in here?
Because you might have thought otherwise. Now, what might you have thought? So perhaps, like I said, perhaps you would have thought that hurting a woman doesn't have the same laws at all hurting a man. You might have thought that hurting a woman...
Well, I wouldn't have thought that.
Well, Mary Beth, if you wouldn't have thought that, then you aren't steeped enough in the background and laws of the Mishnah.
I know. That's why I'm here. So I'm trying to figure out why the sentence was added.
But think also of the time. At that time, it would have... Because in a sense, women were chattel. They were property. So you could have...
So this is to say that they wouldn't be considered witnesses.
We're not talking about witnesses. There's three words here. Nashim bechlal
hanezek. This just says that they are entitled to the same compensation that if the man was the injured party.
Okay, question.
Here
it was, they were talking about a woman, and suddenly they're saying that both have to pay. Is that related at all?
I don't think that's related. The Mishnah's a lot of unrelated details in it, one after the other.
Okay.
Let me show you a verse. Mm-hmm. This was actually one of the questions I asked, but since we're getting to it now, a verse that I believe is at the end of Parshat, either Shoftim or Ki Tetzeh in Deuteronomy. I don't remember exactly where. Let's look. At the end of, at the end of Parshat Ki Tetzeh, I just happened to find it here. I think it's on page 480. Look at verse Kafchet, 28. Perek Chafbet, Fasuk Chafchet, 22-28. Kimsa Ish Na'ara Betula, Asher Lo Orasa. If a man finds an unmarried, finds a betrothed woman. No, I take it back.
No.
Asher Lo Orasa.
No.
Kimsa Ish Na'ara Betula, Asher Lo Orasa. A virgin woman who's not engaged. Utfasa V'shechav Ima V'nimsau. And he grabs her and he seduces or rapes her v'nimsau, and they're found. V'natana isha shochev ima la'avi hanara hamishim kasef. V'lo tiyeh l'isha tachat esher ina. Lo yucha shalcha kol yamav. So he has to pay a fine to avi hanara, not to her.
So he damaged the goods of the father, not of the girl.
Yeah, well,
the girl doesn't own anything.
The father can't get as much money for her now.
Right.
Now, this is not our subject, but I have to add that according to the halakha, there's a chidush here that the rapist has to pay the via na'ara, but in addition to that, he did her bodily damage, and he has to pay her, the chamishad varim, the five payments that anyone has to pay someone who punched someone in the nose. Right? And nezik, boshet, sar, ripui, and shevet, which are the damage and the doctor bills and the embarrassment and the pain and the
loss of time.
Loss of work. That he has to pay her. But the Pasuk says that a certain thing he has to pay to the father.
But he gets to have her for a wife, even if she's not even asked.
No, according to the halakha, at least she's asked. But she is not to be left abandoned without the possibility of marrying. If she wants to marry him, he has to marry her. But again, it's a whole different can of kosher worms.
Oh, she doesn't have to?
No, she doesn't have to, no.
Oh, good.
It's a knas upon him.
Yeah,
and it's also supposed to be a social aid to her that she can have a husband. But the point is that after reading this verse, you might have thought, going to our matter, you might have thought that the Mishnah would be that Nashim are not Bichlal Nezik, because here you see, so you might think that if a woman is harmed, then her father is the Baal Din. Right, is the one who's a legal entity in court.
Mm-hmm.
But the Mishnah says she is a legal entity in court.
But that goes against what happened to Dina.
Because
he didn't get to marry her.
So she wasn't Jewish.
No, he wasn't alive anymore.
No, Shechem. Hamor.
Yeah, he was dead.
Ah, he was killed.
He's dead. He couldn't marry her.
Well, and that's also, if you're assuming that the Avot followed up.
Yeah.
They followed the words.
This is Nara, though.
Say it again?
Nara. So is that it? And our Mishnah
young
is talking
woman.
About...
right, this Mishnah. Is a Nara.
So I might have thought, based on the age difference, that it wouldn't apply to women necessarily.
No,
are there
no.
specifically things related to women?
Oh, the Mishnah doesn't say...
No, Nara is a good marriage.
It says Nashim.
Isn't it?
So the question is, according to the Pshat of the Torah, what is a Nara? In Halaharit, a Nara is a very, very certain, specific girl between the age of 12 and 12 and a half, if I remember correctly.
Really?
Yeah.
It's pretty narrow.
Yeah.
Only
but in the Torah, I'm not sure that's the Pshat. Say it again, please.
Only half a year she's Nara, between 12 and 12 and a half?
I must say, it's been a long time since I learned Masechet Ketubot, but as far as I remember, a Nara, according to the halachic definition, is,
pre-puberty.
Lolita.
Within that window. Let's go back to the Mishnah. Use the word I can't pronounce. Let's just go on. Okay. Let's go to some of the questions which will help us to tie the Mishnah into the verses of the Torah. You can join us at the table if you want.
I haven't been to class. I'm not sure if I'm going. I also want to get a little glimpse of what you were teaching.
Okay. It's complicated stuff. So the question says, and I guess I didn't make enough copies. You'll have to look on in the question sheet. Right? I only made, I guess, 4 copies. Although I thought I made 5, but I was wrong. In light of the verses in the Torah that we have seen on the subject of Nizikin, and that's again chapters 22 and 23 in Shmot, and in light of both of the previous two Mishnayot, can you discover any chidush in the words Shum Kesef v'Shaveh Kesef even before we get to the matter of Bifnei Beit Din? The very fact in this context that we're talking about Shum Kesef and Shaveh Kesef, I can even limit it down. Take out the word Shum. Kesef and Shaveh Kesef. What's the chidush in that in light of the verses we've learned?
We're on
Gimel. 3. So you can look in the Chumashim. They're actually Tanakhim.
My books skipped.
So we're looking at chapters 20, it was 21 and 22, right?
Yep.
What's chidush? I can't remember.
Chidush is an innovation. Innovation, the point. Something you wouldn't have expected.
Okay.
This is the first time they were talking about money payment for damages.
And before, and we were talking about?
the best of the land. That's right. Yeah.
Right. Let's go back to the verse. It's chapter Chafbet.
But wouldn't that come in with respect?
Well, let's see the verse first. Chapter Chafbet, pasuk dalet. And pasuk dalet says there, "Ki of er ish sade ucherem, v'sholach et behro, uver b'steacher." And we said that's talking about regal and shein, but damage done by the teeth of the animal and done by the feet of the animal. The law is metav sadehu or metav karmo yishalem.
Yeah.
That you have to pay from the best of your field and the best of your vineyard. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. And that's called karka. Mm-hmm. Karka, land, as opposed to metaltalim, as opposed to movable objects.
So
the verse seems to say explicitly that you have to pay by giving the person you hurt, you have to pay by giving him land, and not metaltalim, and not movable objects, which means not money. Whereas our Mishnah talks about kesef and shaveh kesef, about money and movable objects that are worth money.
So we are moving from an agrarian society to a money-based society, in a way.
You could say that, but we'll go back and see that actually is a basis in the verses for what? What we read here.
Because you damaged the field, so you have to return the field. You damage agricultural property.
That's a very good point. Yep. That's a very good point.
Mm-hmm. And here you damage the human.
Right. Ilana says that, right, I didn't even realize that. But because we're talking about Shein and Regel that are damaging, trampling, eating in a field, so you have to pay a field, says Ilana.
Well, but if how about killing the, you know, or whatever, injuring the ox, you know, that's could be.
So let's go back to some other verses about, and let's see what it says there as far as payment goes, right? So let's look in other verses. You know, look around and see if it says in any of the verses we've seen anything about what type of payment you have to give.
Can I just ask you though, mitiv haaretz is real estate, it's not the best produce of.
Ooh!
That's what I thought.
That's what it was.
That's what I thought too.
You let the cat out of the bag. I was holding that off for 5 minutes.
Thank you.
You ruined it. Okay, so what Amiram is saying, he's saying, look in Sefer Yeshayahu, Perek Aleph Pasuk Yutet.
He's not really saying that.
Let's go to Yeshayahu, the book of Isaiah.
Which
and now you got me all mixed up in the order that I prepared to see things.
Oh, yeah, I don't know.
Which Perek?
Perek Aleph Pasuk, I think it's Yutet. We'll see if I'm right.
Okay.
You have such good memory with Pasuk.
No, I don't. You know that I don't, I think.
Ushmatem tuva aretz tochelu.
Yeah, which verse is that?
Yutet.
It is Yutet. So it says here.
Very good.
Pasuk Yutet. At the beginning of the book of Yeshayahu, im tovu shmatem, right, if you will desire, if you will want, and you will listen, right, do what the Navi says, tuv haaretz tochelu, you will eat of the good of the land. Now, what does it mean, the good of the land? Obviously, it doesn't mean you're going to get on your knees and eat the land. It means the tuv haaretz, the good of the land, is the produce, the best produce. So you see that the expression tuv haaretz means the good produce of the land. So you plug that back into Sefer Shmot, where the expression is Metav Sadehu. Well, that's parallel to Tuv Haaretz. So you can say that Metav Sadehu means the best of the produce of the land, but not necessarily the best land.
Yeah, because he damaged actually the produce, not the field.
I was waiting for someone to counter and say that. Right. It's not that you trampled on the land that made it impervious to water.
It's not like an oil spill.
Yeah. So what we find is that it's really not clear in our verse if it's referring to karka or referring to metaltalim, to land or to movable objects. It's really an open question.
Did we exclude movable objects before? We didn't.
We did in the two previous Mishnayot see an expression that was Metav Haaretz. Mm-hmm. The end of Mishnah Aleph and the end of Mishnah Bet both were that you have to pay B'Metav Haaretz with the best of the land. Mm-hmm. Now, we assumed last week and the week before that means the best land. But now, wait a second, perhaps Metav Haaretz doesn't mean that.
Don't we have a reluctance to remove land from one owner to another?
Absolutely. But from one clan
That's
to another?
That's why we have the Shemitah and all, and Shnat Yovel. We kind of try
from
to keep
clan,
things.
From one clan, from one tribe to another?
So Meitavahav, it makes more sense that it's produce.
Okay, so I admit I didn't think of that either. But the literature is full of cases in which you have to pay land. I mean, this is the discussion. This is not just me bringing this up. This is discussed in the Gemara and all the literature.
Oh, that's not your honor. Yeah.
Okay. No. So then we wonder what the expression in the Mishnah, Meitav Haaretz, means. Now, Bifashtut, really. Even though in the Torah, the expression Meitav Karmehu and Meitav Sadehu perhaps could mean produce, but when the Mishnah says Meitav Haaretz, I think if it had meant Meitav of the produce of the earth, it would have said that. That's Meitav, at least the way the commentators understand it.
They would have said Meitav Pri?
They would have said Perot,
yeah.
Or Metaltelin. But Meitav Haaretz seems to be assuming that the words in the Torah mean the best of the land. And the Mishnah is telling us. That's in Mishnah Aleph and Bet. Mm-hmm. Whereas in Mishnah Gimel, it says Kesef. We might see here actually a contradiction between Mishnah Aleph and Bet on the one hand and Mishnah Gimel on the other.
But can you? Is it safe to assume that that just people, landowners, would be, you know, causing one another damage? I mean, if you're
just about everyone had karka, right? Just
is that
remember, this goes back to what Ilana said. It's true, right? That at the Shemitah and the Yovel, the karka goes back to the original owners.
But how about like? Cohen or Levi, who doesn't have an apportionment of...
Well, they've been excluded already.
Then they don't have a bull.
No, we said Hekdesh was excluded. Things belong to the Kempel. But the Cohen and Levi, they actually do have some land, by the way.
Oh, really?
Well, they own land in the city.
The cities of refuge.
Right.
Yeah.
So they divided up the cities of refuge and gave each...
They each had parcels. But I am going here beyond the boundaries of my knowledge.
But I'm also thinking that these rabbis who wrote what became part of what wound up in the Mishnah had to literally be dealing with how do you take this stuff and make it work. So we have contradictory evidence here in how you read the verses in the Torah, and when we add Isaiah, we get reinforcement for the idea of it being produce, and not the land physically itself. And even in Deuteronomy, I mean, it says if you kill the guy's ox, you give him an ox.
But so you didn't kill the land.
No, you didn't kill the land. But here, because the focus is on damage to the land, but would they not more likely to have taken the Isaiah view and looked at it as some type of produce or movable object? Because by the time they were writing these, most of the people may not have had land. And so they had to make it work.
No, they had.
In a non-landed.
They all had land.
Well, the question is, who is they? And where
they?
Are we? When it's Israel? Are we in Babylon?
Yeah, I mean,
I don't want to talk about the reality. I don't know.
Well, but I'm just thinking that even in Eretz Yisrael, not everybody was physically a landowner.
Okay, that could be if we are ready in the time of the Mishnah. But just let me point out, there are lots of different ways to parse this. It could simply be, if we read it, that you have to pay from Meitav Haaretz, and that means land, that simply means that if you have land, you have to pay for the land. But if you don't have land, then you pay from someplace
else.
Could be a matter of priorities.
Well, what if the person you've wronged doesn't want land?
Everyone wants land.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. Would not have.
Meet my mother.
Land is the best. Everyone wants land.
Okay.
Unless, of course, it's the worst land.
But you're not supposed to give the best land.
Right. Okay, let's... Now, I want to go back to the verses. Let's look for another verse now that seems to say clearly that you pay kesef and you don't pay land. Okay, just look for a verse of that sort. We're in Mishnah Gimel, but we're looking in the Chumash now.
Ah, now I see what you're talking. And which
are we looking in a particular place, like
in Shmot?
We're in Shmot. We're in Mishpatim. The same verses we've been looking at for the past few weeks. So you haven't been here. It's Perek Chaf Aleph and Chaf Bet.
Right.
Chaf Aleph and Chaf Bet.
Shalem Yishalem.
Indeed, she found it. Pasuk Lamed Gimel. Mm-hmm. Perek Chaf Aleph Pasuk Lamed Gimel. 21:33.
And also Kaf Bet.
Okay, wait a second. Let's read this one first. V'chi yiftach ishbor, o ki yichre ishbor. If a man will open up a pit or will dig a pit, v'lo yichasenu, and will not cover it up, v'nafal sham shama shor chamor, and will fall there a ox or a donkey, ba'al habor yishalem kesef. Or perhaps the better way, I'm sorry, I should read it properly. Ba'al habor yishalem. The master of the boar, Yishalem, will pay.
Okay.
And then it says, Kesef Yashiv Leva'alav. And he has to pay money to the owner of the animal that fell in.
It's explicit.
So we have two choices. Either we distinguish between different types of nezik, and so in the case of boar, you have to pay, whereas in the case that we talked about earlier of Shein Veregel, there it's metav sadeu, metav karma, which might mean produce and might mean land. And if it means land, you have to say there's a difference depending on how you damage. Damage with a boar, you have to pay money. Damage with shein and regel, you have to give land. If again, metav sadeu means land. But if we don't want to make that type of distinction, and we want to read all the nizikin as one category, then we'll either have to say that it doesn't matter, you can do this or that, because both possibilities are given, or we'll have to say, like we said earlier, that metav sadehu doesn't mean land, it means produce, and that will allow it to not contradict the matter of kesef yashiv leva'alav. So this is complicated.
Yes.
But you know, I hadn't thought of it earlier, but I have now echoing my mind what Ilana said 10 minutes ago. Perhaps we can distinguish, although the Gemara doesn't say this, between what was damaged. In the case of the boar, obviously your sadeh will not fall in someone's boar. It's only property that falls, property in the sense of metaltalin, movables that fall into a pit. That's why there you have to pay kesef. Whereas in the case of Shein Veregel, it really is something attached to the ground that's being damaged. And perhaps there, it does make sense to say you have to pay from the field. Again, that is not what the Gemara says at all.
It's like we...
That's interesting.
Yeah,
like
produce
we,
for
when
produce.
We,
yeah.
When we make things kosher, kevolok and polto.
Okay. So, nice metaphor there. Okay, so we're just giving you here the data that is behind our Mishnah. Okay, that was all question one. Question two. What could possibly be the chidush in the phrase bifnei beit din? That's why does the Mishnah have to say? Why isn't it obvious that this matter of the evaluation of money and of the worth of money, bifnei beit din?
Right. Is this the first time we've mentioned the Beit Din?
Is this the first time we mentioned Beit Din? I think it is.
So before it was just up to the two people.
Yeah. Could it have been, you know, each one valued their own property and then they, you know, this
right.
one, the Nazik valued what he lost
and the mazik valued what he was planning to give.
Could have been. Could be.
So this takes it to a neutral third party.
It also implies that at that period there was a Beit Din already.
That's for certain. Mm-hmm. And just to elaborate on what has been said, we could have thought perhaps that the Beit Din has the authority to establish that damage was done and that payment has to be made. But as far as the amount of payment, perhaps that's not the area of the Beit Din.
It seems like that would be the thing they would be, I mean.
Yeah.
Right, I'm not saying what I'm saying with any degree of certainty.
I see. Yeah.
You're right. I'm not saying that makes a great deal of sense what I just said. But before we get to the Gemara, that's all I can think of.
Right. Okay.
Are there any situations where a single judge would make decisions, or is it always a good point.
There is such a thing as Misha Dan Yichidi, a mumche, an expert can Dan Yichidi in certain cases. And I just don't remember all the discussions there, what type of cases they are.
It's like in the American legal system. Certain things demands different level of courts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you're right. Beit Din is Shalosh. That's a good point. Perhaps I would have thought it could be a Dayan Yechidi, a single judge, comes to teach you in a Beit Din.
So like the injunctions against taking into account somebody's wealth or poverty, mm-hmm. those in general apply for I guess judges, whether it's like
one or three or one,
it's
or
at
or
any
more.
Point where you're, you know, a regular judge, you know, or Supreme Court
also,
or whatever.
Also, yes, and also they are kind of, I forgot what is their name, kind of temporary judges. Then I have seen it lately in the American
like
courts.
Magistrates.
Unelected judges.
Okay, but that's not here. That's not here. Mm-hmm. Let's go on to question three. Where have we seen earlier mention of the matter of B'nai B'rit?
Oh, wait a minute.
Well, just in
what about Mishnah 2? Mishnah.
Right, in the previous Mishnah.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to say in Rosh Hashanah prayer.
So in the previous Mishnah, let's see, where did we see actually? Right. We saw that it's only Nechasim Shel B'nai B'rit.
That's a unique expression of the Mishnah, isn't it? We don't have it before the Mishnah. B'nai B'rit?
In the Torah we have B'nai Amecha.
Nacho, yeah.
B'nai B'rit we don't have. We have an American, the list of American organizations,
of
we have B'nai B'rit,
course.
Right?
Really, it's kind of a Mishnaic innovation, or maybe it happened somewhere between the ending of the Tanakh and the Mishnah.
I don't know. I did notice, though, that in the insertions in the Tefillah for Aseret Yimei Tshuvah.
Yes, Kol B'nai B'ritecha. That's where we just said, where is it mentioned? And it popped in my head.
It means members of the covenant. Fellow Jews. So we learned in the previous Mishnah that if you did damage to B'nai B'rit, the court will take up the case and will obligate you to pay if indeed that's warranted. Whereas if you did damage to non-Jews, the court is not going to take up the case.
Mm-hmm.
And we said last time that it's not going to take up the case, perhaps because of a matter of reciprocity. Because if this was a case in which a Jew damaged a non-Jew did damage to a Jew, the non-Jewish court wouldn't take it up. So in their courts, they won't force their people to recompense us. So in our courts, we don't force our people to recompense them. That might be what's going on here. So then bring it to our Mishnah, which it says that the Edim have to be B'nai B'rit. Mm-hmm. And it might be an extension of the same thing. Since their courts wouldn't go through a process to obligate them to pay a Jew for damages, so we're not discussing any cases in which the witness is someone who is not someone who our courts would deal with his case if he was a baldin, if he was the person who was damaged. Again, because we're assuming that's for their courts to deal with. And of course, when it says B'nai Chorin, right, that the witnesses have to be B'nai Chorin, they can't be Avadim. And now Avadim, at least Jewish slaves, are partial Jews. That's right.
Yeah.
Slaves of Jews are really Jews.
How was that?
You have to become a Jew to become a slave. It's a privilege to be a Jewish slave.
It's true.
It is. You get off on Shabbat.
Well,
get a lot of privileges.
Get all the Jewish holidays.
That's right. 2 days of Rosh Hashanah.
I mean, our non-Jewish staff at Temple gets off on all the Jewish holidays.
So, let's go to some further questions. We just did questions 3 and 4, and let's go to 5. Well, question 5 we did earlier. That's the one about the rape case.
So Avadim, we're talking about not Eved Ivri.
When the Mishnah talks about Avadim, it's talking about Eved Kanani. Eved Kanani, a non-Jewish. What we would call a non-Jewish slave, although he's really 99% Jewish. Right. The last question I asked is, in the Torah verses that we have seen on the subject of Nizikin, then that's chapter 21, chapter 22 of Mishpatim. Where is the basis? I see a typo here. Where is there any basis for the statement that hanezik, nizak v'hamazik b'tashlumin, this crazy thing, that not only the mazik, but also the nizak is in tashlumin, someone has to pay. Can we find any basis for that in our Torah chapters 21 and chapter 2? The answer is we can, but where? Yes, Silana.
Mm-hmm.
So she is talking about Karen in the case of a tam, of an unwarned.
Karen
is horn. So let's look at those verses. There are actually two different sets of verses in the goring of an ox and the goring of a human being. Let's look at the goring of an ox. Let's see, where is that, the goring of an ox? That's verse 35, Lamed Hei.
Mm-hmm.
Right, that's the one I guess you were reading from. V'chi yigov shur ish et shur yeyu. Right, if an ox gores the ox of his fellow, umet, and the ox that is damaged dies. The law is umachru et hashor achai v'chatsu et kaspo v'gam et emet yechatsun, that the living ox is sold and its money is divided, and the dead ox is also sold and its money is divided between the two. In other words, both the mazik and the nizak end up losing half and getting half. Which really means, in a certain sense, that the nizak is paying. The mazik doesn't have to pay nezek shalem, has to pay chatzi nezek, doesn't have to pay full damage, rather half. Mm-hmm. So you have this situation where he's even losing half of his dead ox, right? He's paying half of his dead ox.
But it's sort of, in this statement in Mishnah 3, doesn't it imply that is always the case that they both pay?
Good point. Right. In order to make sense of our Mishnah, we have to say it's written in shorthand. And when it says v'hanizak v'mazik b'tashlamim, it only means in the case of the goring of an ox that is a tam, not a muad, an ox that is not known to gore.
Right.
And in that case only, the nizak is b'tashlamim. He has to pay.
Well, they're selling the living ox. So he's getting half the value of the living ox.
Yes.
And half the carcass.
Yes.
Of the dead ox.
Mm-hmm.
So
5 minutes ago he had a live ox. Now he has half of a live ox and half of a dead ox.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. He's not made whole.
No, he's not made whole.
But it's called deductible.
But who wants to buy Shor Muad?
That's right.
It's not Muad, it's Tam.
Ah, okay.
What would it do to the carcass?
Did you eat the carcass?
Oh, sure.
The meat, the leather.
Well, Jews can't eat it, right? No. But you can sell it to non-Jews.
Yeah.
The leather.
Leather, fertilizer, leather. Whatever, I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's worth something.
Okay. Yeah.
It's worth something.
I was going to say, there were certain... What was the quote from the Bible about giving certain things to the dogs? That was...
It says the nevilah, trefa.
Yeah, that's right. If it was killed, mm-hmm. then they could give it to the dogs.
The kelev tashlichun.
Yeah.
Tashlichuhu.
Izevel.
Yeah. So as long as the dog's not
let's
named
give
Irving,
it to the
you're
dogs.
Okay.
So we have a lot of questions still to ask in the Mishnah. Some things are clear, some things are still not clear. And I brought a number of different sources that discuss the issues that are still open. So let's look at these sources that I brought. So the first source is from Talmud Bavli, Masechet Baba Kama, Daf Yud Dal Amud Bet. And it begins by quoting our Mishnah. And I brought the Mishnah there to show you how the Gemara immediately begins relating to the Mishnah. So the Mishnah mm-hmm. says Matnitin, which is the Aramaic word for our Mishnah. Tanitic source. Mm-hmm. And it quotes the Mishnah, Shum Kesef, Shaveh Kesef, Bifnei Beitin, Val Pi Edim, Bnei Chorin, Bnei Brit, V'Nashim Bechal HaNezek, V'Nizak V'Mazik B'Tashlumin. Gemara, my shum kesef. What does that phrase of valuation of kesef mean? What does it come to teach us? Amar Rav Yehuda, right? Rav Yehuda is in the second generation of Babylonian Amoraim. Shum ze lo yehe ela b'chesef. This appraisal of how much the person has to pay should not be except in money. Well, what does that mean? How else could you make an appraisal if not with money?
Merchandise, land,
perhaps.
Animals.
Perhaps. Tanina laha de Tanu Rabbanan.
What is that?
We learned in our Mishnah that which we had learned in a Braita. And as our Mishnah is saying the same thing that a Braita also had said. Para shehizika talit. Vitalit shizika para. Let's look at the case, right? Para shizika talit.
How does it happen?
A cow that damaged a beged. A talit doesn't necessarily mean a talit like with tzitzit on it. A talit simply means a garment or a sheet.
Okay.
So what could it be? Well, it could be that you have a para and it trampled your talit and got it all dirty and ripped it up or chewed it. Right? Mm-hmm. Could be.
Especially a goat.
Rammed it. Mm-hmm. And
Vitalit shizika para. And then you have a piece of clothing that damaged the para. How could that have happened? What happened?
Didn't make it.
On the laundry line.
Yeah.
Okay.
Got the horn stuck
it got
in
caught
it.
On
and
it.
And then what happened?
And it fell.
It
and,
fell
and
broke its
leg.
Right. Okay. So I had the laundry up and she walked into my laundry. I don't know if she damaged the laundry, but she got tangled up, she fell and broke her leg. So says the Gemara, Ein omrim teitse para betalit v'talit b'para. We don't say, let go, teitse, let it be finished. The para betalit v'talit b'para. And we'll see what Rashi says about that means. Ela shamin ota b'damim. Rather, we shamin, we evaluate it bidamim, with money. So let's look at what Rashi says. So Rashi explains this Gemara that we just read. It's only two lines, but it needs Rashi. So first, Rashi says, shumze, and those are from the words of Rabbi Yehuda, shumze lo yehe. Shel nizikin, or it's the this evaluation of nizikin, like we said, right? That's clear. Says Rashi, lo yehe ela bechesef, won't be except with money. Mm-hmm. Says Rashi, shiyu beit din shamin kama shaveh hanezek maner matayim v'chach yishalem lo.
What is maner? 100?
That will be the beit din evaluating how much is worth the damage, 100 or 200. And so he will pay him. And I guess Ilan is right. Rashi's saying it has to be in money. It can't be in karka. It can't say they have to pay this amount of karka, of land. It has to be in monetary terms. It has to be very exact, in other words. And then Rashi gives the two examples we talked about. of the para and the talit. I'm skipping one line in Rashi. I'm going to parashi zika talit, right? A cow that damaged clothing. So says Rashi, shadarsa aleya bechatser chatzar hanizak, that she trampled it in the courtyard of the nizak.
Damaji.
So Rashi makes it clear that this had to have taken place in a case in which the shur or the animal trespassed in someone else's property and got into the laundry. It wasn't in Reshut Rabim. The law wouldn't be like this in Reshut Rabim. If it was in Reshut Rabim, the owner of the shur wouldn't have to pay for trampling your clothing. Rather, the owner of the shur would say, get your laundry out of Reshut Rabim. But if it's a case in which my shur entered your property and got involved in your laundry and he damaged it, then the owner of the shur has to pay, because what's your shur doing in my backyard?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
By the way, what type of damage is this? Rashi says that the animal darsa, trampled.
So it's not to its use. So therefore,
so what is it called?
Shen.
It's called Shane, right?
Mm-hmm.
He was just walking, and we know that an animal that's walking normally, right, has to pay if it damages full damage, but that's only in Reshut HaNizak. If it's in Reshut HaRabim, if my animal just walks over your peirot in Reshut HaRabim, well, my animal doesn't have to pay. I don't have to pay, because what are you doing putting your fruit in the middle of Reshut HaRabim?
Right.
It's talking about Reshut HaNizak, that I trespassed, my ox trespassed, and got into your laundry. Now Rashi explains the other case, the case of the talit shizika para. What happened with the laundry that damaged the para?
So what happens? You hang your laundry in my yard?
Yeah.
So says Rashi, look at what Rashi says.
That it blew into my yard.
Rashi says, talit shizika para b'reshut rabim. In other words, Rashi is saying these two cases are separate cases. It's not that at one at the same time the laundry got damaged and the para got damaged. No, they're two different cases. Because if it was in Reshut HaNizak, right, and the para trespassed, then the owner of the para has to pay for ruining the laundry. And if the animal breaks a leg, it's your fault. What is your para doing in my backyard?
Right.
Mm-hmm. But if my laundry flew into Reshut HaRabim, or I placed it there, and the animal trampled it, well, the animal owner doesn't have to pay. Mm-hmm. And if the animal then fell,
got hurt.
Well, the animal owner is not responsible. What are you doing with your laundry in Reshut HaRabim? Reshut HaRabim is meant for animals. It's not meant for laundry. And in that case, the owner of the laundry has to pay the bala para, because the laundry is in what category? Of the types of damagers we saw in the Torah?
Boar.
How did you know all this? You haven't been here for the past 2 weeks.
That's why I was late. I was listening to your first class, but
really?
I didn't have enough time to listen to the second class.
So it's fresh in your mind.
Yeah.
Very good. Yeah. Right, so the laundry in Reshut HaRabim was a boar.
I didn't know how to put it on stop, so I had to hear it till the end.
Right? So the laundry is a boar. Very good. And a boar, Reshut HaRabim, has to pay. Right, for animals that fell in, broke their leg. So going back to Rashi.
You know, you can imagine where you have, it's not exactly what Reshut HaRabim, but it's a common courtyard.
I was thinking about
that. We had that in a previous Mishnah discussion of a common courtyard. That's a whole different can of worms. That's complicated.
And people hang their laundry out.
But then you have to watch for your cow.
Okay, that's a complicated case. And we had a machloket.
Because everybody's entitled to to do that.
Okay, let's go back to Rashi. I'm going to read this Rashi. It's the fourth line in the Rashi. I'm going to read the whole thing from the beginning. Para. Fourth line of the Rashi. Okay. Para shizika talit. A para that did damage to laundry. Shadarsa aleya bechatsar hanizak. That it trampled on the laundry in the courtyard of the nizak. Talit shizika para, brishut rabim. When the talit did damage to the parak, it fell, it got tangled, broke its leg. That's only in Rishut Arbim. Kagon shenit kala beima betalit v'nishbar regel para. For example, that got tangled, the animal in the talit, and broke it, the leg of the para. Fine, we understand. Says Rashi, the next line, Ein omrin teitzei para betalit. Right, Rav Yehuda had said, we don't say that teitzei para betalit. Just let go the para and the talit. What does that mean? Rashi says, what don't we say? Yitol et the para shizika talito velo tie nishumit ela hen chaser v'chen yoter yitlena. What we don't say is, take the para that damaged the talit, and we won't appraise it. Rather, if it's more or it's less, just take it. That's what we don't do. Right? If the para damaged the talit, we don't say, take the para. That's the payment. No, we have to do a shuma. We have to do an appraisal. Exactly how much was the talit worth? And that's how much the Baal HaShur has to pay. There's no nothing like this. We're just giving the shur. Say it again?
A para is much more expensive.
I assume so. And then Rashi says, Ela shamin ota bedamim. Rather, we appraise it in damim, in monetary terms.
Oh.
Rashi says, shamin nizikin bechesef.
Awesome.
We appraise the damage with money, in monetary terms. Ulefi mashi ziket chaviro yoter yishulem. And how much that it did more damage, it pays more.
Oh, so that doesn't—that answers. So I hear money, and it might be the before it was merchandise, because this here the discrepancy between para and the talit is so huge that you can only deal with it monetarily.
Okay.
Para is a cow.
Cow.
Right. So everything has to be given value. That's the way the Gemara understands our Mishnah. That we have to work with exact figures.
We have to have a common denominator.
What do you mean, a common denominator?
Well, between an ox and a piece of cloth, or a cow and a piece of cloth.
What do you mean, common denominator?
Well, every cow is not the same, you know, and so you can't say, well, a cow is worth this much cloth or whatever.
You're right.
The only way you can do that is if they're all worth money, and then you say, this one's worth 75, this one's worth 50, this one's worth 2.
Okay. Let's go to the next source I brought.
Like a used car.
Which is Babylon and Talmud, Tractate Baba Kama, page 7a to 7b, with Rashi, and see also Sefer Yeshayah, which we saw already. We saw the verse from Yeshayah 119. So it says the Gemara, Rami le Abaye le Rava. Rami le
lifted
means to bring a kusha, to bring a difficulty. And what it literally means, Rami is to roll. It means he rolled against him, like he rolled a boulder against him.
Rami is to roll?
Yeah, he rolled a kusha against him. So Abaye brought a kusha against Rava.
I thought to Rominhu is I not throw
same thing.
To him?
Same thing.
I saw
to roll, to push at him, right?
Yeah.
Push at him a kusha. And what's the kusha that Abaye brings against Rava? He says, Kativ, it's written in the Torah, Meitav Sadehu Umeitav Karmo Yishalem. That's the verse, right? That says you have to pay from your Sadeh and from your Karam, you have to pay the best. And says Abaye, explaining the verse, Meitav in Mid Yachrina La. Which means the Meitav, that's the word from the verse, the best of the land, in, yes, that's what it's talking about, Mid Yachrina. Which means something else. Achrina is other, acher.
And
something else,
midi?
Lo.
What is
midi is something.
So in is yes?
In means yes. Right, don't get mixed up. In Hebrew, ein means no. But in Aramaic, it means yes.
Also in Arabic, they say in, no, aywa.
Oh.
Right?
Yeah.
So, meitav in midi achrina la. So, what's happening simply, apparently, is that Abai is pointing out that the verse says you have to pay karka and you have to pay the best of the karka, and how could the Mishnah be telling me something else? The Mishnah says kesef and sheva kesef, and Abai here not only brings the Mishnah, but he brings a braita that learns out from a verse that you're allowed to use money, to pay money. What's the braita of Atanya? Behold Atanya, based on a verse, Shmot Chafalef, and that's the verse that Ilan had pointed out, the verse that has the word yeshiv in it. The word comes from the verse with bor. It says, let's look at the verse again, right? This is a really important verse. It's the verse concerning bor, and it's verse 33 in chapter 21. I'll read it in Hebrew, verse Lamed Gimel, top of page 188. The owner of the pit will pay. And then it says even more than that. Kesef yashiv leva'alav. Money he will restore to the owner of the damaged object. Of the ox. So it says clearly, it says, right, yishalem, and it says kesef yashiv. What could be clearer than that? So it's true that one verse talks about karka, the best of the karka. Another verse talks about money. What are we going to do? And the braita goes on to say, the word yeshiv, lerabot sheve kesef afilu subin. That the word yeshiv teaches you not only that you have to pay money, but even that shava kesef, that things worth money, movables are okay, and even bran. Bran, you know what I mean by bran?
Yes.
In other words, what you would think is the most worthless thing. I'll never forget that the first time I was learning Gemara, we learned Bava Kama. Not the first parak, the third parak. And my teacher, my Rebbe, would always emphasize almost every single day that you can even pay with dirty socks. That was his expression. And I didn't know then, but that was probably his translation of subin.
Subin.
In other words, now, you have to understand what's going on here. It doesn't mean that you could pay less than you owe. It means you have to pay the value of what you owe. Now, let's say that I owe $5. And if I go to Walmart, as far as new socks go, you have 6 new socks for $5. So if I'm going to give new socks in payment, I have to give a package of 6. If I'm going to give dirty socks, I probably have to give 10. Right? Because the person who gets it has to take them to the laundry. Right. So I have to give the same value.
Right.
But I can give that value even in subin. How much subin would I have to give for $5? That's a lot of subin, I guess. Subin isn't worth too much.
Not if you go to the health food store.
And they're expensive. Yeah. But when they say subin, they mean something that's almost worthless. And I just want to point out, as Rashi points out, we probably don't have time to look at the Rashi, but the verse has, according to Rashi, a ribui in it, because the verse says the following. It says, Yishalem will pay, and then it says, Kesef Yeshiv, and he should give money. It says it twice. First it says Yishalem, which already means money, then it says, give money. So what does it say? Money, money. So the Gemara says, it says money, money, to tell you anything worth money. Even subim.
Oh, really? Even so it says sucks. Money twice, and that means not always money.
Exactly. In other words, it's a ribui.
I would have thought that. Sure, no problem. Oh.
You're getting it, Mary.
Mary Beth is a troublemaker.
Well, why not say it twice?
It means socks.
If you really meant it.
Meant it.
Yeah. Like, once is enough. Why did you have to add? Okay. So, so therefore, let us point out what just happened. Abaye pointed out that in his opinion, the simple meaning of the verse that says Metav Sadeyu means karka, and it means the best of the karka. He's not reading it as produce. He's reading it as karka. But there's another verse, the one about the boor, that says clearly money and even dirty socks.
Or subin.
So we have, and of course again, Ilana has a solution that this is talking about damage of boar, this is talking about damage of shein and regel. But Abai doesn't consider that. The Gemara doesn't consider that at all. The Gemara has to search for a solution. How could it say both this and that? And in this particular passage, I brought this as a solution. I have to tell you, this isn't the only solution. The Gemara struggles with this for a whole page. But one way of looking at it, the Gemara says, Lo kashya, kan midato, kan ba'al korcho. Here, of his own free will, here against his will.
Oh.
Which means the following. That if I go up to the person I damaged, and I admit it, and I say I'm willing to pay, in that case, I can pay even subim. But if I refuse to pay and he takes me to court, because of the trouble he went to take me to court, then when the court makes me pay, the court's going to take my land.
Oh. Huh. So you better be a good
boy.
You
better settle out of court.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's right? Yeah.
So is that what they finally decided?
No, actually not. It's actually not clear what's decided.
They wait for Elijah.
Well, this is very important stuff.
So you see that I now have three dots there, which means I left out a lot of material. And I'm just going to bring one more little line here on this subject. They came up with a kashya against our solution. And there's another approach. Amar Rava, kol diatev lei me metav letev lei, which means all that he gives him, from the best he gives him.
Not the dirty socks, but the Walmart socks.
That's right.
But Ilan is right. When it says all that he gives him, the best he must give him, well, why the best? Because we're working on the verse that says, Metav Sadeu, Metav Karmo. But what does it say all? Because it's interpreting the verse differently now.
Yes.
Interpreting the verse like the book of Yeshayahu. Mm-hmm. That the best of the field doesn't mean karka. It means produce. It has to be the best of the produce. So again, this contradicts what we said 2 minutes ago.
Kashya.
I'm just showing you that there are different approaches in the Gemara. Now let's see, on the same subject,
isn't Mechilta,
the Mechilta.
Mechilta a Midrash collection?
Yes, it is. The Mechilta is the collection of halachic midrash on the book of Shmot, and there are two different Mechiltot, one of Rabbi Yishmael and one of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. Two different Mechiltot. And I brought here from the Mechilta of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, and there are two drashot, one of the other, two drashot that contradict each other. The first drasha says, Metav sadehu, Metav karmo yishalem, right, that's the verse, Milamed she'ein shamin lo ele mina idit. Teaches us that we don't appraise him except from the idit. Idit means the best of the karka.
Unlike ziburit.
The opposite of ziburit, which is the worst of the karka. So one drasha understands that metav sadeo means karka. But a second drasha says just the opposite. Right afterwards. Metav sadeo metav karmo yishalem. Milamed she'ein shamin lo ele mina metaltalin.
Oh.
Because it's reading, apparently, the word sadehu, not as land, but as produce from the land.
And at that point, it can be socks.
But clean socks, because
yes.
It's metav.
But it's metav.
It's got to be best, yeah. And with no holes.
And then there's a Gemara from Gittin in the Yerushalmi. That brings a bright, a tani. Ein li ela karka. I wouldn't have known anything but karka. Minayin she'im ratza li ten kesef. How do I know that if he wanted, he could give money? Tamud lomar, kesef yashiv leva'alav. The verse of Bor. So this Yerushalmi is apparently reading that both verses are true. Right?
Yes.
The one verse that says karka teaches us that karka is the basis. But then the other verse about boar that teaches that if the mazik wants to give kesef, he can give kesef. And so they're both options.
So what happens if you give karka? In the yovel, you get the karka back?
15 minutes ago, I started thinking about that. And I realized I guess so.
So it's kind of temporary lease.
I guess so.
Unless the Ovel custom stopped.
It did, but when? I don't know.
Yeah,
when.
I don't know.
I can't remember all the days and years that I learned Bava Kamma. Anyone ever asking that? No, there's so much I don't know. Okay. So anyway, here's a Tosefta that's bringing us to a new subject. We only have 5 minutes, but let's see the new subject. It's a matter of Edim. So says the Tosefta.
Where's the Tosefta? Here.
Al Pi Edim. Right, the top of the next page. Milamed shekol devar shukanas ein mishalem al pi atzmo. Teaching us that any matter that is kanas, that is a fine, he doesn't pay according to himself, which means self-incrimination. So we will ignore for 1 minute the word kanas and just assume it means the same as tashlumin, which it doesn't. It's a complicated word.
Yeah.
Let's assume it means tashlumin. So it's telling us this Tosefta is basically a commentary on our Mishnah. It's a Tosefta at the beginning of the Masechet, just like our Mishnah is the beginning of the Masechet. And it's what does it mean when the Mishnah says Edim? It means that you don't have to pay if you admitted to the damage and there are no witnesses.
Mm-hmm.
You're allowed to pay if you want. Of course, you're always allowed to give gifts. Mm-hmm. But there's no legal obligation to pay unless there are two witnesses that you did the damage, even if you admit it.
Even if you admit it?
Yes,
really?
Absolutely.
No obligation.
No obligation.
So if somebody hit my car...
And there's no witnesses.
They did it to me.
There are no witnesses.
According to this Tosefta, that's what the Mishnah means.
Mm-hmm.
And since the Tosefta is commenting on our Mishnah, and the Mishnah is talking about all payments in general, so we can assume that when the Tosefta says kanas, the word here means all payments in general. There have to be two witnesses. But just, you know, let's just wait a second, because it's only 1 minute left, and I want to finish something.
Okay.
Because the next two sources are going to disagree.
Of course.
Yeah.
So our Gemara in Bava Kamma, further on, much further on Mud Ayin Dalet, page 74, there's a Mishnah there that seems to say it a little bit differently. The Mishnah says, I'll tell you what it's talking about. It's talking about the case that someone stole an animal and then he butchered it and sold the meat. And there's a specific verse that says that if you steal, you have to pay double. And if you butcher it or sell it, you have to pay four or five times, depending on the circumstances. So let's look what the Mishnah says. The Mishnah says, Ganav al pi shnayim.
Shnayim edim?
Yeah. He stole and there were two witnesses. Tavachu machar, he butchered it or sold it al pi edechad. But there was only one witness that saw that he did that. Or al pi atzmo. Or there were no witnesses, but he admitted it. In other words, there were witnesses that he stole, but what he did further down the line, there are no witnesses or only one. But he admits that he did it. He admits that he stole it, and then afterwards he admits also that he sold it or he butchered it. And says the Mishnah, Mishalem tashlumei kefel, veinu mishalem tashlumei dalad vehei. He has to pay double, but he doesn't have to pay four or five. Why? Because for the stealing there are witnesses, so you have to pay double because she stole. But for the four or five payments, it was only hodat atzmo, only self-incrimination, but there are no witnesses of that. He doesn't have to pay for it. Now, what does that teach you?
That it's only knas.
That teaches you that as far as the knas goes, that is to say the payments above and beyond what you really owe for special acts, let's say, that you can't be incriminated for on the basis of your own testimony. But as far as the basic payment, that you can be incriminated for your own testimony.
Just your own without a witness.
So and then that brings us now to the following issue. I guess we'll have to end with this, which is the following. When your animal damaged, is that considered, and you have to pay the damage, is that considered basic payment, or is it considered kanas?
Now you might say that's the basic payment. I'm only paying for my damage. I'm not paying a fine over and above. But on the other hand, you can say no, because it is a fine. You didn't purposely damage. Rather, you didn't watch your animal. And you're being fined for not watching your animal. It's not a payment for stealing something, like you purposely went and stole.
Why did
no.
we get into this distinction?
I'm making it up.
We started out with, if your animal does this, you're liable.
Of course you're liable. But how do we categorize the liability? Is it the same type of liability, like giving something back after I stole it, which I'm just giving back what I took? Or is it actually a fine that goes beyond what I'm responsible for replacing what I stole? Why? Because I didn't steal anything. I didn't mean it. It wasn't me. My animal, I forgot to watch it. So perhaps do we say that when you forgot to watch your animal, the money you have to pay is simply like restoration in the case of thievery? Or do we say, no, it's like a fine. It's over and above. Because what did I do? I didn't do anything. Yeah. I just didn't watch my animal.
Does it include a penalty for negligence?
In other words, exactly. Is the payment of full nezik, is it considered a penalty for negligence, or is it considered restitution?
Do we have to decide that? Who cares?
Oh,
well, it might matter because of this matter of self-incrimination. It might be that self-incrimination gets you in the hole only for restitution, but not for penalties.
Self-incrimination. You can't...
Admitting your guilt.
You can't admit that you were...
Well, you could admit it.
You could admit it, but you're only going to have to pay the basic and
damage.
Not an extra penalty. But if there were witnesses, you're in trouble.
So if you're going to do something bad, you better do it in
the dark.
Make
sure there's no witnesses.
So let's just end by looking at what it says here in Mishnah Masechet Ketubot. I brought three and a half lines in Hebrew. Just look at what's relevant here. The part that's relevant is the second word of the second line.
Mishalem
et hakeren al pi atzmo. Veino mishalem tashlume kefil v'tashlume arba v'chamisha. Right? So it says, self-incrimination, you do pay the keren, but you don't pay double or 4 or 5 times. Now, that doesn't apply to us, because that's about stealing. But now look at the next line. The next words. He meet shuri at ploni. If my ox killed ploni, Mr. X, O Shorol Shoploni, if my ox killed the shore of Ploni, Hareze Mishalem al pi atzmo. You do pay for self-incrimination. You pay for self-incrimination.
And that's because of the gravity of the crime? Because he was a man
because
killed,
in technical terms, because we're saying that the payment is considered restitution, it's not considered a penalty. So that's what the Mishnah says clearly in Ketubot. So how does that jive with our Mishnah? Our Mishnah had said,
Al-Pi-Adim.
Whereas the Mishnah in Ketubot seems to say you don't need Adim for the Nezek that you have to pay in these cases. There might be a machloket between our Mishnah and the Mishnah in Ketubot. So, we have no answers, just a lot of issues that the Gemara spends much time dealing with. And not just the Gemara, but the Rishonim and the Akronim as well.
And the courts today.
Yes.
Well, this restitution versus penalty, it makes a difference whether or not you have a witness?
It might.
Yes.
According to some sources,
according
it might make a difference.
Yeah.
So... even if it wasn't me, it was the ox, and I didn't take the ox's face and force
no, but
him
you
to
were
do
guilty
it.
Of negligence for letting the ox get over there.
Right, and somebody saw that, but if they didn't see it.
If you admit, instead of, it's a different story, and if witnesses tell about you.
Yeah.
Gemar chatima tova, everyone.
Gemar chatima tova, tzom chan. Yes.